Time now for Hidden History. Last weekend, crowds of people gathered inside the large gallery at the New Bedford Whaling Museum for the 22nd annual Moby Dick Marathon.
As tradition has it, we'll say, "Watch, officer, give me 8 bells."
Over a 24-hour period, more than 200 narrators took turns reading excerpts from the novel Moby Dick by Herman Melville.
Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse.
The marathon celebrates what many consider to be one of the finest works in American literature and Melville's connection to New Bedford in creating it. Robert Wallace is one of the many marathon readers and a Melville scholar. He says that in December 1840, a broke, unemployed Melville showed up in New Bedford.
He trained to be a surveyor and there were no jobs. He went to Illinois, couldn't find anything there. He taught in Greenbush, New York on the Hudson, and they ran out of money and couldn't pay him at the end of the semester. So he really didn't have very many options. So pretty much desperation to head out to sea.
Melville spent about 9 days in the city. In late December, he went to the custom house and signed up for a whaling voyage, and he shipped out on January 3rd from Fairhaven aboard the Acushnet.
And that's why we always start January 3rd, and a big blizzard this year. We often have severe weather when we come here, and it really gives us appreciation for what it would have been like for these guys to head out in this kind of weather for the South Seas.
Wynne Kelly teaches literature at MIT. She's also a Melville scholar and one of the readers. Kelly says Melville served aboard the Acushnet for about a year and a half.
Then he jumped ship in the Marquesas and served on other whaling and naval vessels in the sort of beachcomber way that sailors did at the time. They would ship on, jump off, and then come back by various routes.
He returned from the sea after 4 years, living for a time with his family across the river from Albany, New York. There, and later in New York City, he wrote 5 books before starting work on Moby Dick in 1850.
When Moby Dick first came out, it wasn't immediately regarded as a classic. In fact, as I understand it, some critics were kind of like, they didn't think that much of it. How many years did it take for it to achieve the status of a real classic?
Or was
that
not? 1 century. Yeah.
Well, there's an interesting publishing reason for why it didn't take on right away, because he was a popular author. The plates were shipped to England, where authors often had their texts published first, and they left out the epilogue in which he explains how he was rescued. So it was an entirely different book from the one that we know now. And the reviewers said, "This is crazy. This is a book by a dead man. What happened to the narrator?" So they were negative reviews. And by the time it got back to New York and was printed properly, which was not too long after, it had already gotten these negative reviews. And that kind of jinxed it.
Melville was understandably disappointed by the lackluster response to Moby Dick, and he moved on to short stories, poetry, and other novels. Then, around the 1920s, readers began to take a second look.
Howard Mumford was an important critic in the 20s who admired the book. And then Rockwell Kent did the famous book of illustrations in the 1930, which had a lot to do with broadening the influence of the work. And then by 1944, Matheson's writing American Renaissance, and he's one of the top great American authors by the early 40s in the academic world. And that's when he started having like schools of American studies in universities. You know, he'd been mostly studying British authors until this period. So a lot of serious readers started digging into it and really seeing what an amazing book it is in so many ways.
Melville died in 1891. Wynne Kelly says he never would have dreamed that one day hundreds of people in New Bedford would brave near-zero temperatures to take turns reading sections of Moby Dick for 24 hours straight.
And the other bench in the room was about 4 inches higher than the planed one.
One thing he'd really like is the number of different languages and the social diversity, because that's what he encountered on whaling ships. And that's one of the reasons I think the book has endured so much, is that he got out of this New England family and into the whaling world when he was still young enough to learn that there were other religions, other cultures, other languages from the ones he'd been taught, and to bring that back into his book with a vision of a much more global universe than the one he'd been brought up in. So to see so many people here from not just this area, but from so many different backgrounds, he would have felt right at home.
For WCAI's Hidden History, I'm Brian Morris in New Bedford.